Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively going to keep it local. We're going right down the street here to City Hall and parts downtown. But before we do that, I must say, I think the last time we got together with this guest, personally, was at a state fair, some chicken and waffles, some of that coffee, that French press that Mueller loves so much in there, and probably you were having some. You like that meat lover's omelet, right, Don? That was your thing at that day, I think.
Maybe. No, I I'm a creature of habit. I get the Steve-O, man. Eggs with all kinds of meat on the side. Nothing good in it for
That's
me,
how you're staying healthy
goes,
out there.
Right to my arteries.
No scrapple on Valentine's Day weekend on the Portales menu or the El Guapo menu. And, of course, that of Fadley's, our friends of... Come on, man. It's too early in the day for all that. Let's think about crab cakes at Fadley's. That far supersedes scrapple. By the way, don't sleep on the mac and cheese at Fadley's as well. They're open now. We took some fish home a couple of Fridays ago. I made some delicious steak fish, breaded it up, did it old school like my mom did it over on Bank Street. Don, I said to my wife, I went out to get a cup of Rofo coffee here to keep me going through the morning. And I said, I've got the only politician I've endorsed ever in the modern era on next. She's like, tell Bill I said hello. And my wife's never met Bill.
Well, we were pretty enthusiastic back in the fall. And as you said, Nestor, we have made it a habit really not to endorse in elections, but we did make an exception because
you got to trust somebody, Mueller, with the money, right?
You got, and we thought the election of former Councilman Bill Henry to the office of controller was important, and we asked all of our listeners to pay attention as we endorsed him, and we were delighted that he ended up winning. Mr. Controller, welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you so much for having me. I got to tell you, I'm on an emotional roller coaster in just the first 90 seconds. First of all, the very first thing is you reminded me of the intense longing and jealousy that I felt watching Nestor chow down on the chicken and waffles while I was trying to sit there and be a good guest and just drink water. And then you took me to the, do I choose between a Fadley's crab cake or scrapple as what I really want to be having right now, which is, you know, that's tearing me in half, like right there. That's a Sophie's choice. And then boom. Boom, you're just loading me up with the praise and the support, and I'm just so grateful. Thank you.
Well, you know what? I'm surprised you went with the fake background in the bookshelf when you had that beautiful snow setting at your window that I woke up to. You know, because I wake up at the harbor, and I put my shots up, and everybody loves my harbor shots, right? I have this unique vantage point that I love so much in the city I love so much. But, you know, you had a beautiful little snow thing. You put up such great posts about pop culture and different things, but you know, we got to talk some shop here in the city, and all of those things that we sat around without a mask, a little over a year ago, and we talked about, well, we're going to run, we're going to beat Joan Pratt, we're going to, you know, all of that. Now you're in the seat, you've been in the seat a couple of months. I don't think we've even talked plague with you very much, have we?
No, not really.
Right before the election, maybe back in the fall, in the spring, we talked a little bit about that. But, boy, you've inherited a way different world than the one we sort of drew up over, you know, over pancakes and eggs a year ago, right?
Yeah, this has been a completely different experience than what I was expecting / hoping for when I set out almost just over 2 years ago was when I started the campaign for comptroller. We started doing the organizing work in January of 2019 and kicked off officially in June, early June of 2019. And actually going from all of that to a swearing in where I couldn't even have my whole family there. You know, my mom and stepdad, had to stay home. I don't know if we've talked about this, but my father passed away last April, after I was on the show, but before the primary election. And so
we're very sorry about that, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you. The whole starting this job has been very different than I had envisioned it being.
And it was already not going to be an easy job, as we all sat around and talked about, you know, the kind of transition you were going to bring or wanted to bring, right?
And that part is still exactly what we expected. We inherited. I literally, this desk that you can see behind me, that is a desk that when I came in on December 8th, didn't have a computer on it. And what you're seeing right now is I had to literally drag a little, what I think was a typewriter stand, over to the side of my desk to set my laptop up on, because the only place in that area to even plug in a laptop was over on this wall. And
are you telling me as a citizen that Joan Pratt did not operate a computer? Is that, I mean, I'm not looking to be mean or bad, but like, I just need to get my arms around like what was being done on behalf of our citizens, of which you're one of them. It's not tattletaling. It's just what you inherited, right? Literally.
She had a laptop assigned to her, but it does not seem to have been part of her regular work day.
Well, Bill, let's pick up on that. Yeah. I love Nestor's question there, because I do think that's what our listeners are interested in. When I say that, it's the job. So yeah. Take us back for those who didn't listen 6 or 9 months ago.
And we invite you to find it. It's at Baltimore Positive.
It is out there in the audio vault. It's on Baltimore Positive.
Candidate Bill Henry.
You've been there now 2 months. Mm-hmm. Refresh people's memories. And then I'm going to tell you about a conversation that I had with some folks yesterday related to your position. Tell people what the city controller does and why it is an important job. Nestor and I promise to shut up and let you educate us.
Well, this is what I've been explaining to people the whole time, from when I started running through the 2 months that I've been doing the job. The controller is supposed to be the watchdog of city government. It's supposed to be the position that keeps an eye on the mayor and the city agencies, making sure that the agencies are doing their best work, being effective and efficient. But most importantly, the controller is supposed to be taking the information that they have access to on how the city agencies are operating and making that information available to the public, so that we, you know, the people of Baltimore, so that we can make informed decisions about how our leaders are spending our money. And for fans, any fans of the West Wing, the 10 word on this is, if more people knew how their money was being spent, I'm certain that city would spend it better.
Well, Bill, I want to jump in there, and I want you to keep going, because that was the question. And again, I obviously come from county government and familiar with how that governing structure works. My question to some colleagues yesterday was, it came on the heels of a recent Sun article where your budget director said, we're in a hell of a mess, and we're going to be in a hell of a mess for a long time. I'm paraphrasing, but not too much.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, a hell of a mess and a hell of a mess for a long time. My question to folks was, does the controller get to be part of the solution, digging us out of that hell of a mess? So my question to you is, do you? And if so, how do you start to dig out?
So there's two sides to digging out of this mess. One side is, and I know you guys are okay with occasionally touching on the national issue. On one side, we need national level help repairing the economy. And that is not something that's going to get fixed at the state or local level, no matter how forward thinking, no matter how innovative or creative anybody is as a governor or a mayor. To some extent, that's just a fact of economics. Only the federal government can borrow the amount of money needed to inject cash back into the economy and get the economy going again. State and local governments, by charter, by constitution, have to balance their budgets each year. But the federal government doesn't have that constraint, And so they're the partner that all the states and localities need to get the economy really going again. And I am very pleased because the new administration in Washington seems to get that and seems to be trying to move forward to do that. On the local level, what we can do, you know, and this is true during pandemic times or non-pandemic times, what we can do is not waste money. You know, what we can do is we can make sure that the revenue that we have, the resources that we have are used as efficiently as we can use them. And so that's what I'm going to focus on. I'm going to focus on making certain that we don't, you know, blow money out the door that doesn't need to be.
Bill, do you have access on that? Apologize, Mr. Controller. Do you have the ability to dig down in and be real with people here about the bureaucracy? If you want to do a deep dive into the Department of Public Works and how they're spending their allotted budget, do you have? I always say there's two kinds of worlds, right? There's what you appear to have on paper and how it really works. So on paper, do you have the authority to do that deep dive? And then the second part is, in a real world, do you have the power to do that deep
dive? In this particular case, that kind of deep dive, I have both the power on paper and the actual capability of doing that deep dive. The city has its own Department of Audits, and that Department of Audits reports to the comptroller. Looking at that particular issue, when I sat down with the city auditor a couple weeks ago, he was putting together his 2021 audit plan. You know, I made certain that on that audit plan is a very detailed dive into DPW's water billing system. And that was one of the things that I ran on because it frustrated me that it's been for years, it's been obvious to everyone that our water billing system is messed up. Even the people in DPW acknowledge that there are.
Can I ask a question as a citizen? Was there ever a doctor that came? You know what I mean? Did they ever call a Winston Wolf in to try to, like, really figure it out? Or was it just literally kicked down the curb when everybody knew about it?
Well, we bought a new water billing system a couple of years ago. And
I'm not interested in the system as much as I am the people, right? Like, I mean, who's executing it is my issue.
Yeah. Well, let me react a little bit, and then I'm going to ask the controller to jump back in because I think it gets to your question, Nestor. Mr. Controller, because the county was very much involved in purchasing the iTron system.
Yeah.
We're all on the same system. Obviously, you all bill county customers. And then
what year was this, Mr. County Executive?
That we bought the iTron system.
16, something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say near the end of County Executive Kamenetz's second term. Very lengthy process, out to bid. Several vendors wanted the contract. They settled on iTron, not to bore people with that. Now, I will tell you, Mr. Controller, a couple of stories. And I'm at the point now where I can say this stuff publicly.
Good.
Two things.
One, honesty around here in my politicians.
One of the problems that kept being reported back to us was that city IT / public works folks tried to rig, and I don't mean that in a nasty way, tried to jerry-rig the software from iTron that was made to be used off the shelf, and in doing so, made the readings less than accurate, which affected readings in Baltimore County. That was one piece of the puzzle that, as you dig into it, we see if that's still an issue. The other was, and this was very frustrating to us, we had hundreds and hundreds of meters that hadn't been read in Baltimore County. We were told that it was impossible. This gets to Nestor's point. And we were throwing a lot on your plate here, Mr. Controller. We were told by the Department of Public Works that they had tried and no one could locate these meters at these properties. So we said, we're going to make it easy for you. Give us all of the addresses that your meters, that your folks say they can't find meters. Just send us the addresses. We literally sent people out, and by the end of the day, had readings. Now, that was really, really frustrating. So how do you, I mean, here you are, you're the new sheriff in town. How are you going to go about fixing this water thing?
Yeah, it's funny that you tell that story about DPW saying they couldn't find the meter, and you said, well, just give us the addresses. I have that same story. As a council person, there's a development in my old district, and the HOA president reached out and complained that they weren't getting their meter read. They had one master meter for the whole complex. And, you know, we reached out to DPW and they said, yeah, we can't find the meter. And I literally put the phone down, put on my coat, walked out of my district office, got in the car, drove over to the place, walked around. It didn't take 5 minutes.
Bill, that's what we did hundreds of times in one day. Now, folks out
people
there
need to get fired over that as a citizen. That's, you know, that's just the way that rolls, right?
And I want to make it clear, anybody that's listened to this show, everybody knows Nestor and I are not city bashers. We're city promoters. We love Baltimore City, but we want the city to work well. You ran on this. Get down into the weeds. What needs to happen to make sure that Councilman Bill Henry doesn't have to get in his car to go?
Or in this case, I'm trying to make things a little bit easier on Councilman Mark Conway, who has taken the place of former Councilman Bill Henry.
Right, exactly.
Worrying about me and my neighbors. That is what the audit is going to focus on. I don't want to pretend that I'm going to have answers for you in a week or two. This is going to be a very detailed, very careful, very comprehensive thing. It's going to take months to do it right. What I'm looking forward to, though, is we have had lots of cooperation from the new mayor's office in terms of working out the details, making sure that we have access to all the information. And to be honest, I've had a really good conversation with the leadership at DPW. One of the things that I think is sometimes difficult is it's hard for anybody to admit that they're wrong or that they made a mistake. It's just generally speaking, hard for people to walk back a bad call. And one of the particular benefits of a change in leadership, of a turnover, of a new administration, is you can put the mistakes of the past behind you emotionally as well. And you can just treat it as sunk costs and say, yeah, okay, we did that. It was a mistake. Let's now focus not on how do we defend that call. We can stop focusing on how can we do workarounds, like what you're saying, jury rigging software to make the thing that we already bought work a little bit better. Just figure out maybe we need something else. Maybe iTron was a mistake and we just need to get something else. But let's make that decision as objectively and as clear-headed as possible and not let it be clouded with, you know, trying to insulate people from blame or feeling fault.
Well, just fix it, right? As a citizen, just fix it.
Just fix it.
And my recollection, and I stand to be corrected on this, but the county spent over $1 million to do its own, get its own report from ITRAN to get the readings and measure them against our readings. We spent a lot of money to try to figure out and we found them to be well over 95% accurate. So we didn't find the issue with ITRON. We found it, you know,
it's the information going in.
Correct. Now let's jump to the bigger issue though, Mr. Controller, because I think this is the one.
That's good to know. I was just going to say, that's good to know.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, again, I stand to be corrected, but that was my recollection. But let's talk about the bigger issue of city finances, because some of these topics have been debated for so long. And again, the budget director recently reports we're in a heck of a mess, and that mess is going to go on for a long time. You identify the need for federal funding. One of the other things that, and we know there's been significant revenue drops, we've got issues office buildings sort of being vacated now because people are at home. We've got the issue where the small businessman and woman are struggling, restaurants. And then you hear bantered about all of the time. Nestor is up against this as a city homeowner, this whole issue where the property tax in the city is twice what it is in any surrounding jurisdiction. Now, immediately you say, that may be true, but when I'm getting crushed on revenue, how do I even talk about reducing property tax? It must give you a headache when you think this stuff through.
So when we were talking a little bit earlier about the federal government being the partner that we need them to be, that particular comment was about the pandemic and about fixing what is really a I don't think I'm using the wrong words when I say a global recession. I'm trying to remember who was it who said that the difference between a recession and a depression is in a recession, your neighbor loses their job, and in a depression, you lose yours. You know, it's just a question of really how badly you're personally impacted. And we've got a really bad economic time right now across across not just this city, not just the state, not just the country. This is a global issue. But the historical side of this is what I'm often trying to deal with, because the issue of Washington not being the partner we need is not just around the current economy. If you go back historically, the federal government used to be more of a partner with states and localities for a lot of big ticket capital items, a lot of infrastructure thing, water and wastewater systems, roads and bridges. We used to get more support from Washington than we've gotten for the last roughly 30 or 40 years. And Baltimore made some clear, I'm going to say, questionable decisions about how it was going to deal with its declining tax base back in the late 60s and the 70s. And the reason we ended up with a tax rate that is twice what it is in the counties is, as people fled Baltimore all through the 70s, the mayor and the city council at the time, instead of taking the more painful option of reducing city services dramatically to match the exodus, they raised property taxes on a declining base to try to keep the money kind of even. And that's where we find ourselves today in the aftermath of trying to hold steady, because, and I do know who said this, it was Wally Erlinski, former House of Delegates member, former city council president, Wally Erlinski, who said that the problem with all the people who left Baltimore after the riots was they didn't take their streets and houses with them. And so because we're landlocked and we have a defined area, when people left, that left a city government that was still responsible for the same amount of space and the same amount of stuff, but with fewer people to pay for it. And so the dream has been for years, we would love to reduce our tax rate back down to something more competitive with the surrounding counties. The trick is, how do we increase our base to the point where we can afford to do that? And that's where you get different, mayoral visions over the years of how do we increase development and investment in the city to the point where the base goes back up so the rate can come down.
That is one. I got to tell you, Mr. Controller, Nestor, you always say you like to go to social studies class. That's one of the best historical summaries of how we got to this situation where Nestor's property tax is twice of what it would be if he were to move 6 or 7 miles to the west or 6 or 7 miles to the south. It's a great summary. So the question becomes, what's the path forward? Obviously, it's not coming in and saying overnight, let's just slash the property tax rate. And it seems to me that the issues facing the city haven't gotten easier. They've gotten more complex as drug addiction takes place and economic distress sets in. So you're a former Loyola Don. You think this stuff through. The Jesuits.
I'm still a Loyola Don.
Oh, you're still a Loyola Don. There are no former Dons.
They don't let you out. It's like the mafia.
The Jesuits taught you to think deeply. When you go to 10,000 feet and sing the Loyola fight song, what do you try to envision long term as to how we get this ship turned around, so to speak, particularly on the financial side, so that we're not hurting people who are already hurting too much?
Well, let me give you the straight answer to that, and then I'll also tell you why the straight answer is hard. You know, the straight answer to that is, as someone with a background in urban policy and a clear understanding of real estate development, the answer to that is the same answer that your doctor will give you about needing to lose weight. Is, you know, if you're 40 pounds overweight, your doctor is not going to tell you, I want you to lose those 40 pounds by the next time I see you in a couple months. Doctor is going to say, just focus on eating a little bit better, losing a little weight, get to the point where you're losing like maybe a pound a month or two, maybe even just 3 or 4 pounds a year, and just steadily over time, get yourself back down to a safe weight. The responsible thing for us to do is what we were kind of trying to do for a number of years, which is just try to lower the property tax rate a little bit at a time, but get it into the expectation that every year we're going to lower the property tax rate a little bit, and we're going to try to make sure that our operations can continue to provide the services that people need to have while working with just a little bit less.
That's
money.
Really difficult, Bill. You're asking, you're literally right. You're asking to say we're going to lower the costs, but keep the services either equal or better that you could possibly improve by taking in less. That's a very, that's a difficult premise in life, not just financially, but in any walk of life, right? Like,
well, it's difficult in two different directions. It's difficult from the service provider. Like, how do you, as a manager, continue to provide the same amount or better services with less money each year? But it's also difficult from the customer perspective, because let's be very candid. We're Americans. We don't want to wait years and years and years for the things we want. We want to, when we elect a mayor or we elect a governor or we elect a president, we're expecting them to fix stuff right away. We want somebody who's going to come in there and he's going to tell us, or she's going to tell us, that they're going to make certain that this is done in like time for the next election. And the problem is that's just not going to actually be possible.
You know what, Mr. Controller, as you spoke, I was thinking, I can't remember the sexy terms that go with each of these examples, but as you were speaking, I was thinking, boy, I read a book, I bet you, because time flies, I bet it was 20 years ago now. I read a book called Leadership Without Easy Answers. I remember that book vividly. And in that book, the author, Ron Heifetz, talks about two types of change that we demand of people. And he uses the example that they both get the same result. One's kind of easy. The other one's kind of hard. In other words, if you go to your doctor and you say, you know, I got muscle pain in my right shoulder. He goes, well, you know, if you take his pill, this is an anti-inflammatory. You take his pill for a couple of days, it's going to feel pretty good. Your example is that's one kind of change. Not hard. I take the pill. I'm good to go. The other one is he said, well, you know, you got inflammation all over your body. And a lot of it's related to, you know, your borderline diabetic. And what you really have to do is you really got to get your diet under control. Mm-hmm. And you've got to lose 25 pounds. So when you're talking about that, I thought, man, jumping right out of that book that I read, there's this kind of change, and then there's much more complicated type of change. And it sounds to me like you're saying, let's be honest with folks in the city. Let's begin to have some hard discussions about what government looks like. Because, Mr. Controller, here's my concern when I read that article the other day. Watched enough governments and studied enough governments over the years that the knee-jerk reaction, and I don't think this will be true for the mayor. We've had the mayor on, and he seems really committed to a new vision for the city as well. But for time in memoriam, what governments would do when they get that kind of outlook from a budget director is, me reaction is, oh, let's cut every department 10%. That's it. Give me a number. What's the math? And there's nothing more ineffective than that approach, as opposed to opening the hood and figuring out what we have to do differently. I wonder if you can talk about that analysis.
I can't tell you how many times, I mean, I swear to God, if it might be more fingers than I have on my hands, the number of times as a council person and as staff to the council president back in the 90s, I watched mayors take that approach, that times were tough, and so what they told the budget department to do is make everybody do a 5 or 10% cut across the board, usually except for fire and police. And a lot of times what we would see actually happen is, if you think about how the general fund works, most of the city agencies that get money from the general fund, that money is, I shouldn't say most, many of the agencies that are getting money from the general fund are using that money to leverage state or federal grants for their operations, especially in departments like the health department, a lot of them in housing, job services like Mayor's Office of Economic Development. The five departments that just plain run off of general fund money are fire, police, libraries, rec and parks, and sanitation. And so every time things are really tough, there's always this public, you know, pressure to hold fire and police harmless, you know, understandable, not necessarily the right thing to do from a financial perspective, but we can come back to that. But definitely the political support is always there to hold fire and police harmless. And who wants to cut trash collection if they have the choice? So what ends up happening is you end up getting a disproportionate cut to rec and parks and libraries because that's where you're spending money.
Well, and Mr. Controller, continue that thought. Here's the issue that was always placed on my desk, or when I worked for Jim Smith, his desk, or on Kevin.
I was going to say, we're all the mayor of the city in this conversation. Right. Yeah, hey, if you were Brandon and you had the pie and you had to make responsible decisions on this much money, how much pie would we have? Right.
But Nestor, and here's the problem. And I want to ask the controller to talk about it, because I doubt that it's changed. Whenever it was presented to us in the county, if you really started to do the deep dive, once you took out salaries and benefits, salaries and benefits took in Baltimore County about 85% of the general fund budget. So people think there are these millions and millions.
You're cutting stuff. You're really cutting people.
It is stuff. That's a great way to put it, Nestor. So how do you get under the hood Mr. Comptroller, as a government. You're there now. You own it. The mayor who we're fond of owns it. How do
you get
under the hood?
There's not a lot of stuff in the government. There's more people, literally, right?
Well, okay, so for this is one of those times, I say for better or for worse a lot, and I try to be very aware of when I'm saying it. Is this actually something that is for better or is for worse? And the reality is that for several years, and I'm trying to think if this goes back 10 years. It might not go back quite that far. But there has been a conscious effort in city government to reduce headcount. When I went to work for the city council president's office back in 1991, Baltimore City had like 27,000 employees. We literally are at half of that today. And the truth of the matter is, it's not like the budget is half of what it was then. And it's not like the population is half of what it was then. What has happened has been a conscious effort to contract out a lot of the work that used to be done by in-house employees. And the perception internally was this would be cheaper and better for Baltimore City.
There's a lot of that in government, isn't there? Whether it's jails or whether it's we're going to hire mercenaries to go to Iraq to fight wars for us, right? Like, literally, the first thought is, well, let's hire someone that's not part of the government, right?
Except the rationale for that is, first, this belief that, well, the private sector, because they don't have government's various burdens, can do it cheaper.
And better.
But the way that they can do it cheaper, 90% of the time, the way that they do it cheaper is they pay people less. They pay the employee, they pay the actual people doing the work.
They break the union. Money. Literally, right?
And here's the thing. Whether you believe that's a good thing or a bad thing in general, I'm not gonna start an argument about the pros and cons of
$15 an hour, whether you're the employer or the employee, right?
If you're a city government and the employees are the people who live in your city, it doesn't benefit you as a city government for the people who work in your city to make less money.
Or lay them off, Mr. Control.
Or lay them off and have them not hired by the company.
And then not have the trash picked up.
Right.
I've always been empathetic when people would want to criticize. For example, the easy comparison is you go to the Department of Public Works in the city and look how many employees. Reporters do this all the time. Then look in the neighboring counties, Baltimore, Anne Arundel, and they say, my gosh, there's, you know, the city's only 68 square miles and they got all these employees. But I think in order to have a real discussion, yes, they should be held accountable. Yes, they should be effective. Yes, they should be able to read meters. We all agree on that. But it is important to the discussion to say, having folks employed with a regular paycheck and a pension is a good thing long term. You know, one of the people, and I know you have to run, you've been very gracious with your time, but one of the budget folks in Baltimore County, I don't care where you are, you always get into this thing is, maybe we should get away from a guaranteed pension, defined benefit program, and go to a defined contribution program, right? A 403B type program. And to their credit, up until this point, Baltimore County budget officials always argued that it sounds good, and perhaps the upper level and the white collar county government employees might be able to work with that and make ends meet. But our guys that are fixing the grounds and repairing the sewers, that are living paycheck from paycheck, they may not be able to do that. And that the social cost 30 to 40 years down the road of a defined contribution program might undo any advantage.
And by the way, doing the micro jobs too. Doing the micro jobs, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. So I think you do have to weigh all that.
I really find that to be one of the more challenging aspects of when you look at all of the different parts of managing a city budget, trying to figure out how we treat the benefits and the pension for our employees. We, our previous budget director, who has now been gone for a couple of years, but was there for a long time. He made it very clear, I mean, to the point of making public statements at council hearings, that he felt city employees were overcompensated when it came to benefits. But that was because he was looking at it purely from the perspective of the cost to the city of paying the benefits. And he was being told, this is what you have to do. And for him, it was frustrating to have this untouchable pot of money that he couldn't reduce when he was trying to get all these other things accomplished. And he didn't want to accept the fact that we have a social contract with the people who have worked for the city. Like, when you took those jobs, you took them with an expectation that maybe the salary isn't as great as I could get somewhere else, but it's going to make up for that when, after 20 years, you know, I put down my burdens and I, you know.
You make the city better. You've made your community better. You've contributed.
And the other thing is, it's hard to do now because of the pandemic, but as a council person, I went to community meetings all over my district, all over the city for, you know, various reasons. And one of the things that isn't talked about a lot in these kind of conversations is retirees and people who are close to retirement age are probably, you know, you could call them the backbone of the civic capacity in the neighborhoods of Baltimore City. Most of the communities are held together by the older residents because they're the ones who now have time to focus on the unpaid work of keeping a community association, you know, vibrant and strong. And if they don't have a good, dignified, stable
life,
financial life,
yeah,
to base that on, they're not going to have time to be helping their neighbors and their friends either. And that's going to be that would be its own huge, difficult to measure, but huge hit to the quality of life in Baltimore City.
And before, boy, what a great place to end. You've been, we've overstayed our welcome. You've been very gracious.
He always overstates his welcome.
I know. It's my fault. It's always my fault. But just to those people who will now jump on Facebook and beat up Nestor and me and probably beat up you and say, there you guys go again. You're talking about no accountability, just giving people a check. Nothing could be further from the truth. You and I and Nestor all believe people ought to do their job well. Yeah. They ought to show up to work. They ought not.
You can't find the water meter and Don right. and Bill can get in the, you know, and drive over and find it. That's unacceptable.
Right. So let me
toss one little grenade before I go. One of the things that we just brought up at a
wait a minute before you toss that grenade, I want to go on record publicly to your staff and saying it's the controller who's asking to stay on a couple more minutes. But now toss the grenade.
A couple weeks ago at the Board of Estimates, one of the issues that came up was a cop who had done stuff that was wrong was found guilty. In a court of law, and the city ended up getting sued for something that he did. When we talked to the law department about, we're going to have to pay damages because of what this guy did, can we go after his pension in order to, you know, try to make the city whole for the expenses paid out? And we were explained that in the deal right now that we have with the FOP, there is no such provision that if you can.
It's kind of like being a president in January, sort of like that. A little bit like that.
No, here's the difference. Here's the difference. In the other retirement system, like for example, in the elected official retirement system, if you're found guilty of a felony, the city doesn't have to pay your pension.
I remember with the terms honorable and faithful, right, Mr. Controller?
Faithful servant.
Kathy Pugh's probably in the middle of a little bit of that right now.
And so one of the things that I think we should be talking about is it's one thing to want to take care of the people who worked for your city and who did their jobs and did them well for decades. I think we have a responsibility to take care of people like that after they leave city service. Thanking you for your service is nice, but paying you is real. But if you screw up, if you don't do your job well, then you broke your side of the contract. And that's something that I think the city should be looking at more. That is accountability.
Bill, thanks, man. We appreciate you, Mr. Controller. I got to call you that now. I'm trying to call Don, Mr. County Executive. Hey, I would have talked a little pop culture with you, but we'll do that next time around.
We'll do that next
Scrapple,
time.
All right? I'll look the other way. Okay, well, I appreciate it. There he goes.
It's got to be extra crispy. Got
to
be extra
and
it's crispy.
And it has to be Rappa, extra crispy, a little mushy on the inside. Oh, my God, you're touching my heart. Mr. Controller, have a great day. Stay safe.
Thanks, guys.
Make the city better. Thank you.
I think grossed out 80% of the audience that doesn't like Scrapple, including me. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive, I am Nestor Aparis. You can find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. Hope you're out there with our app. Hope you're out there with our website and all the places we are. And certainly hope you're supporting all of our sponsors, including our friends over at State Fair in El Guapo. And, of course, at Fadley's downtown and soon to be in Catonsville. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.